And welcome to Ukraine Calling, your weekly review of what's happening in Ukraine with a focus on a main issue. I'm Bohdan Nahailo for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv, and here's a look at some of the stories that were in the news this week. Well, the main story, as we know, is the head of the tax service was arrested on corruption charges. A Kyiv district court ruled on March the 7th to place Roman Nasirov under arrest after a long and dramatic hearing. Nasirov was the chief of Ukraine's fiscal service and has been charged with fraud and the embezzlement of $74 million. Nasirov was ordered to surrender his foreign passport, was given a bail of 100 million hryvnia, approximately $3.7 million, and has been ordered to spend 60 days in pre-trial detention. This was a landmark win for Ukraine's independent anti-corruption bureau, NABU, and for civil society. There had been a number of attempts to arrest other high-profile officials, but all had managed to evade arrest, often due to procedural technicalities. Nasirov is the highest-ranking politician, or official, to face corruption charges yet. Nasirov is known as a strong ally of President Poroshenko. On the other hand, he has been known for undermining attempts at reform and stopping attempts to change the tax administration and customs service. The president applauded NABU's case against Nasirov and said it was a good example of the effectiveness of anti-corruption reforms in Ukraine. Roman Nasirov's lawyers, however, are appealing the charges. Whatever turns out to be the case, or rather whatever turns the case may take, it may be one of the biggest legal challenges for Ukraine since independence. And meanwhile, outside of Ukraine, Ukraine accused Russia of financing terrorism in the International Court of Justice. This week saw the preliminary hearings in Ukraine's case against Russia in the International Court of Justice in The Hague. Ukraine is seeking a fine against Russia for intervening militarily in Ukraine, financing acts of terrorism, and violating the human rights of millions of Ukrainian citizens. Ukraine had submitted an indictment against Russia on the 16th of January to the UN's highest court. Russia stands accused of violating two conventions, the Convention on the Suppression of Financing Terrorism, and also the International Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination. The Ukrainian side maintains that Russia has financed illegal armed groups, trained them, and supplied weapons to them in the self-proclaimed Donetsk and Luhansk People's Republics in eastern Ukraine. It also is accusing Russia of illegally annexing Crimea and discriminating against Crimean Tatars and pro-Ukrainian Crimeans. Russia had previously denied sending its army or weapons to eastern Ukraine. In the hearings, it has claimed that Ukraine does not have sufficient evidence of weapons being supplied to the separatists. After the preliminary hearings, Ukraine has requested the court to order conditional measures, which is to order Russia, quote, to cease and desist, unquote, while the case is being heard. The hearings are expected to last at least until the end of April. Meanwhile, the war in the east continues. In fact, there has been an overall increase of ceasefire violations this week, up from 84 to 153 daily, particularly in the Mariupol area. Observers noted that there was an increased use of enemy drones, probably due to better weather conditions. According to the Ministry of Defense, 5 Ukrainian servicemen were killed in action and 55 were wounded. 4 civilians were wounded as a result of enemy shelling close to residential areas. In western Ukraine, in the Lviv Oblast, there was an explosion at the Stepova mine. 8 miners were killed and 6 were injured during this explosion in a mine close to Lviv. The cause of the explosion is believed to be methane gas, and there was also a tunnel collapse. Also this week, coal miners from the same state company, Lviv Vuhilya, staged a protest in Lviv to demand their unpaid January wages. The case was resolved in a commercial court. The company and the miners' wages are to be paid. And, of course, on the 8th of March, we had International Women's Day observed in Ukraine. It's been a public holiday in Ukraine for many years, but this year it met with mixed reactions. There has been an initiative led by the decommunization movement to downgrade International Women's Day to a regular working day, as it is in Europe. However, losing a public holiday did not seem to gather much support. For some, the holiday felt like a remnant of the Soviet ideological past. In the 50 years since it became a Soviet family holiday, its nature has changed and it has taken on a sentimental tone. It is an occasion to make sentimental speeches and present women close to you with flowers and chocolates. Only 1 in 5 Ukrainians now see it as a day which reminds them of women's rights. There is a younger generation who see it as the day to voice issues such as gender discrimination and domestic violence. Women's Day marches did take place in at least 6 Ukrainian cities on the 8th of March. And now we'll move on to our feature interview, where we will look at Ukrainians from outside of Ukraine, from what has been called until now the diaspora, and discuss with them some of the issues related to what it means to be Ukraine in today's modern world. We've got quite an interesting topic, which might be of interest to many of you out there of Ukrainian origin, who were either born in Ukraine, or your parents were born in Ukraine, or your ancestors come from Ukraine. Actually, this week, I was one of 4 people who were given, awarded, whatever the operative term is, the status of a Ukrainian living abroad. Used to be called a foreign Ukrainian, Zakordonny Ukrainec. Sounds a bit strange, I know, but on the other hand, it is a form of recognition of a link to Ukraine for those of us who were born outside of Ukraine, who live outside of Ukraine, and who may not really know this country all that well, but still feel a closeness to it for whatever reasons, cultural, family, history, sympathy, whatever. Anyway, I thought that a very interesting discussion could be held on the topic of what does this mean, and in the broader context of what does it mean to be Ukrainian these days. I, for instance, was born in Great Britain of Ukrainian parents. My mother is from the Kyiv Oblast, and my father's from Western Ukraine, from Ternopilska Oblast. But I was born and my sister in Ukraine. My first wife was from Canada. My children have Canadian citizenship and yet feel a very strong affinity to Ukraine. And when I was at the ceremony yesterday in Kyiv at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, I met 3 other colleagues, much younger than myself, who were also given the status. And I've managed to get at least 2 of them, 2 of the 3, to come and join me in the studio today. So I have here Anton Tkach, who is from Australia, and he'll introduce himself, tell us a little bit about himself. All I can say is that I know his father, a very well-known translator from Ukrainian into English, and presumably the other way too, from Australia. And we have Oleksandr Bartnyev, who will also tell us about himself. And he's got a Russian passport, but he has Ukrainian roots. The third person, Valentin Vinnichenko, is from Moldova. Unfortunately, he's not here to join us, but just to give you an idea of the spread, Ukrainians from Britain, Australia, Russia, Moldova, from near and far, as it were. So let me ask Anton, colleague from Australia. Anton, why did you apply for the status of a Ukrainian living abroad, Zakordonny Ukrainec? Was it simply for symbolic reasons, or does it give you some practical advantages holding this document?
Well, I guess for me, it started with having a few issues with the embassy everywhere. And I chose to just apply for this to see if it could help me with, you know, going to the embassy a few less times a year instead of going there every time, waiting the 30 days, getting your passport back, finally get it all together, and then, nope, it's not working. And, yeah, so now that I have it, I understand that I can get a multiple entry visa for 5 years, and it's also much easier for me to get my work visa done. So I'm possibly off to Warsaw tomorrow to get all the work visa stuff done there and then come back and have it all done within a week.
So from what you're telling us, I understand that the choice you made to apply was more of a pragmatic one, a practical one, a way of facilitating your entry into this country and your conditions of stay here.
Yeah, of course. So for me, I've felt Ukrainian my whole life. I grew up speaking Ukrainian as my first language. English I learned at 3 and 4 years of age. Parents are both Ukrainian. Dad was born in Australia, but his parents are of Ukrainian descent. And mum was born here in Uman in, I think it's Chudkaiska Oblast, I think.
Yes. Well, that's interesting. So your father was actually born in Australia, and you've been eligible for this status, even though it's now, what, 2 generations ago that you're...
So the status, I think you can go all the way up to your grandparents' level, and as long as you can prove that your grandparents were born in what is Ukraine today or what was Ukraine, then you can get this status.
And as I understand it, this status falls short of giving you citizenship. It allows you to apply for a visa for 5 years or more to work here. So you have certain advantages.
You can apply for citizenship because as this card gives you all the rights and responsibilities of being Ukrainian, you can, I think, eventually apply for citizenship. It just takes a while for you to get there.
Okay, Alexander, over to you now. So you've applied. You have a Russian passport.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, your background.
I born in Russia, in Petropavlovsk-Kamchatsky. It's very far from Ukraine, but my father born in Kharkiv.
Let me just ask you to tell our listeners, how old are you? You look very young.
I am 18 years old now, and I am studying in Kyiv National University, named after Shevchenko.
What are you studying?
I am learning physics in second year in this university.
And I noticed from our conversations that you speak good Ukrainian. Where did you learn Ukrainian in Russia?
Yes, I live almost all my life in Ukraine, and I studied Ukrainian language in Poltava Specialized School number 3.
Oh, the heartland, the area of Kotlarevsky and Hohol and many others, yes?
Yes, I studied Ukrainian language and literature there.
Okay, and why did you apply for this status?
This status means not just social, but some practice for me, because I planning to continue my study, and the status will help me to continue my study easier. And the second thing why I applied to the status, because it means for me to be like a part of one big community that I live in.
Okay, well, thanks for bringing that up. This is what I wanted to move on to. For me personally, obviously, there were the practical considerations to facilitate my entry and stay here. But, of course, I wanted some reaffirmation of my links to Ukraine. And it's nice to have a document, however symbolic it remains, that you are part of what you call that community, that family. And I think that today it's, and I'd like to hear what the two of you think, I think that today it's almost artificial to divide Ukrainians into we, they, those who live in Ukraine and those who live abroad. Because in today's world of social media, where we can communicate with one another across borders, across continents very easily, where we can see on the screen in front of us what's happening at the Maidan, what's happening during the Orange Revolution. For me, today, the sense of Ukrainianness is not a geographical thing. It's something to do with a sharing of common values, an identification with a cause, with a country, with a project, whatever you want to call it, but something that links our parents, our ancestors, with what is being attempted in this country today, in whatever form it's taking. What would you say?
I mean, I partly agree with you. You go to Ukraine, sorry, you go to Canada or Australia, and you see Vyshyvanka worn more often than you would on Maidan here. As in, not on Maidan during the revolutions, but just, you know, today it's this Wednesday and you see people walking around, but you see very few Vyshyvanka. Go to any Ukrainian festival, go to Ukrainian schools, go to, you know, Ukrainian dancing, which you see twice a week in Melbourne. It's there. It's all there. Like, you see Vyshyvanka all the time. You see more traditional dress, more people practicing Ukrainian culture, not possibly language. So I think, as you mentioned, you know, being Ukrainian is very symbolic, and this card is just bringing us closer to being in Ukraine. But being in Ukraine doesn't necessarily mean you're more Ukrainian or less Ukrainian than living abroad and being Ukrainian.
But is that because living outside, where you felt at least some generations ago and some decades ago that you were in exile, that you were artificially removed from your motherland, and hence a sense of nostalgia, guilt, a desire to be in contact again, to continue processes that were left unfinished, that is different than here, where being Ukrainian is taken for granted. Obviously, today it's different because there's a war going on, and after Maidan, there's a different political, psychological setting, shall we say. But for most people, I guess, they don't need to wear Vyshyvanka embroidered shirts, national costumes so much. Though I would say that in the last 2 or 3 years after Maidan, I've seen a greater pride, certainly in Kyiv, Lviv, the big cities, in wearing emblematic forms of Ukrainianness, whether it's embroidered shirts or blue and yellow ribbons or whatever it is, as a kind of assertion of Ukrainianness, particularly among young people. So I think I see that more, and I hear Ukrainian spoken more than I ever did. What's your observation, Alexander?
Yes, I think so. For example, in our university, I see blue and yellow flags more, and we have study on Ukrainian language. So I think that in last years, Ukrainian nation are more
united?
Yeah.
Cohesive?
More united than whatever in another period of history.
Is this because it's not simply a geographical consideration, but we're united perhaps around core ideas, independence, democracy?
Yes. With the help of internet, Ukrainians all over the world can unite and stand for right ideas, for democracy, and for
Being themselves.
Yeah.
Can Anton, I just touch
please
on a point there? I've heard it said a few times now at very many different protests that you can go to a protest of 50 people, you'll have gay, straight, right-wing, left-wing, everyone's there because they're united against something that's, you know, whether it be corruption, whether it be moving on with progress in Ukraine. It's just those set of core ideas that you were talking about, independence, no corruption in Ukraine, a decent living wage, that's what they want. And all those ideas come second.
Okay, because, you know, we are limited in time, unfortunately. Give me some sense of what does it mean for you today as young people to be Ukrainian? What is that about? Why is it important in your life?
For me, it's very important because all my friends, family are just a part of society, and be an Ukrainian, it's like be a part of the society too, to find work in this society, to live with them, to
belong to it, to be useful to it.
Yeah.
Thank you. And Anton, how do you see it?
It's a very hard question.
You have a bit of a head start because your dad is very involved in cultural life.
So I guess it's a hard question for me because I grew up and had maybe a little bit of an identity crisis when I was younger, whether I'm Ukrainian or Australian, and then as time went on and I went overseas, travelled, saw people, they go, so what are you, Australian or Ukrainian? And the more and more you talk to people, they go, you can't be Ukrainian. You're Australian. Like, you've grown up there, you have the accent, everything. And then you go, I spent 10 years at Ukrainian school, 10 years doing PLUS, Scouts, you know, like, what am I? And I guess coming here, coming to Ukraine for a few months, visiting, working, is blurring that line even more. And I still don't have an answer for that, whether I'm Ukrainian or Australian.
But I think, you know, one of the very inspiring things that I've noticed and that I've witnessed myself is that the sense of Ukrainianness is no longer a narrow one. It's not limited to Vyshyvanka, as you said, to Varennike, to language, to even a particular understanding of history. The sense of being Ukrainian is more a sense of being part of a European nation and knowing one's place in the scheme of things, geopolitical, ethical, moral, etc., etc. And I feel quite comfortable being British with my British education, but being Ukrainian. I don't have a problem combining the two. I mean, the only problem I have is that, you know, the British passport considers me a subject of Her Majesty the Queen. I would prefer to see myself as a citizen of a country, especially after the French Revolution, whatnot. But this is a British quirk that I'm sure the Australians and Canadians understand. But nevertheless, I think today one can be Ukrainian and be comfortable about it, even though our adversaries, particularly Moscow, would like to typecast us as some kind of narrow-minded, neo-fascistic entity. I think Ukraine today, particularly its younger generation, is very open, and it's very open to the world.
No, I completely agree. But, like, what I mean is that I'm not struggling with being Australian or being Ukrainian. It's just the lines are so blurred about whether I am Australian or Ukrainian that I feel comfortable in both. It's just when someone asks you on the street, you know, where are you from? And you go, am I Australian or am I Ukrainian?
For example, when I have on the status, I something like being Russian, and no one say to me like, you are not with us, you are foreign people, go away. I was in one family too. I studied in school, and all my classmates understood that I am like some of this.
You belong there and here.
Yeah.
You've made your choice, but you can fit in. And I think the operative way would say that you respect cultures, you respect backgrounds, as long as people are tolerant and are respectful to you.
So I had in school a lot of friends, and my nationality wasn't like a wall between I and society.
But nevertheless, as you said at the beginning, you identify with Ukraine through your family and with what Ukraine represents today, which is a personal choice that you've made. Even staying here, as I understand it, you are here not just because you want to be a student, but you feel comfortable in Ukraine.
Yeah.
You feel at home here.
I really feel that my home is here, and I'm planning to build my family in Ukraine.
Anton, and other Ukrainians in Australia, and let's assume you're talking about Canada and America today. You know, we've always been faced, those of us born outside, with the problems of assimilation, losing that culture, losing that touch. Is that bond with Ukraine still as strong as it used to be? And is Ukraine, in your view, Ukraine, official Ukraine, doing enough to cultivate, to prolong these ties?
So I'd say it's very different talking to my dad's generation, who, you know, his parents arrived in the 50s and they came to school and they were told, no Ukrainian, you have to speak English. My dad's name was changed from Yuri to George when he came to school. He had no clue what George meant. And I think, you know, being born in the 90s is a whole different era. You've had Nezalezhnyus, you've got a whole new kind of Ukraine coming through. And same like in Ukraine, you meet people who are born, you know, before the 90s and after the 90s, and you can see a difference.
So are you telling me that being Ukrainian has become more attractive for younger people?
Yeah, I'd say that. But it's becoming a different kind of Ukrainian, because in the 50s, you had Ukrainian mum, Ukrainian dad. Now, more and more, you've got either one parent's Ukrainian, you know, one parent or one of their grandparents is Ukrainian. And so you've got people coming to scout camps and coming to events that don't speak Ukrainian, but they love Ukraine. They don't know why, but they love it.
And looking forward, would you bring your children up as Ukrainians or would you prefer them to, I mean, it's a personal choice. Or let's not talk about nationality and citizenship. Would you be prepared to instill in your children, to pass over to them, your sense of Ukrainianness?
Without a doubt. Absolutely without a doubt.
I will try to save Ukrainian tradition and to my children's. I will give it to.
Okay. Well, we don't know what Valentin Vinnichenko would have told us, but with a name like Vinnichenko, he must feel some affinity to Ukraine. That's quite strong, and obviously he applied also for the status. I've been talking to my guests today, who are Anton Tkach from Australia, at present working here, to Alexander Bartyeniev, from Russia, but with strong ties to Ukraine. And this is Bohdan Nahailo, born in Britain with a British passport, some say even with a British accent. And I look forward to talking to you again and inviting other guests to share their views with you next week. Thank you so much for listening. And now moving on to culture. Well, Crimean Tatars seem to be in vogue. This month's issue of Vogue magazine online features a story on Crimean Tatar fashion prepared by a Ukrainian photographer and Crimean Tatar models. The display of costumes is quite unique, especially considering that some of them are antiques and a number of them had to be brought out of Crimea. And we've also seen, during this last week, Shevchenko Day, observed just yesterday. The prestigious Taras Shevchenko Prize, the highest prize for significant contributions to Ukrainian arts and culture, was awarded on Shevchenko Day, that is, the 9th of March. This year, there were four winners. Writer and publisher Ivan Malkovich for literature, sculptor Mykola Malyshko for his achievements in the visual arts, composer Bohdana Froliak for her work with music, and for film director Stefan Koval. Ivan Malkovich thanked the committee on behalf of the prize recipients with an inspiring interpretation of Shevchenko and a plea for protecting the Ukrainian language. People across the country celebrated Shevchenko Day in many different ways, from traditional poetry recitals to creating innovative internet themes. I personally attended a concert in the Kyiv Philharmonia of the famous Bandurist Chorus. The city of Kyiv celebrated with happy hour, which meant free rides on the metro for passengers who could quote Shevchenko poems. And now moving on to music. Well, we haven't played music from Odessa for quite some time. So here's a number for you by Public Drama called Poesia, which means poetry. Enjoy.
проводили з тобою стільки слів. Ми виснували стільки, стільки синіх снів.
And looking ahead, next week, please tune in for a new episode of Ukraine Calling. And we'd love to hear from you in the meantime. Write to us at Ukraine Calling, one word, small letters, lowercase, at romadskeradio.org. Ukraine Calling at romadskeradio.org, all in lowercase. I'm Bohdan Nahailo for Romadske Radio in Kyiv. Thanks so much for listening.